You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
Welcome to this week's Signs of the Time podcast. We're back with Jean-Pierre Petit to continue our conversation. Last week when we left off, we were talking about the RFID radio chips, and Jean-Pierre was getting ready to tell us about how they can get these little devices to lodge in our brains. So let's pick up there and see what he has to say.
The answer is very simple, you know. You have this RFID, you inject, they are very small size. It's smaller than 1 millimeter, a tenth of millimeter. So you inject a lot of this device in your blood with an injection for vaccination, for an example.
Like and a flu vaccination.
And if this device are lighter than blood, it will float. And if you look at this earth, the heart, you have the cross of outer.
The aorta.
Aorta, you have the cross of aorta. So this object will tend to stagnate at the top of the cross of aorta. And there you have little arterial that comes in your ear, in your internal ear. And if you have practiced scuba diving, you know that there are problems when you have decompression. Bubbles can appear, and then these bubbles can take this arteria and destroy your nerves in here. Mm-hmm. That's for some divers have some equilibrium problems, you know, like that. But if RFID is located in your internal ear by this way, it is an optimum place to be triggered by your portable phone or radio wave emission from satellite. And what you have to say is if you have such device in your internal ear, you can create sounds you cannot hear, so you can suggest things to people. You can modify. We call that crowd control, and this crowd control can be based on weapons, on threatening, but it can be based on things like that. And we can say a few words about HARP. You will find also files in my website about HARP. Mm-hmm. HARP is an emitter which is supposed to study the high altitude, the ionosphere. Mm-hmm. But we know that the system may be coupled with an ionizer. You have two beams with two frequencies. The two frequencies are very high, but where they cross, the difference of the two frequencies are optimum to ionize the air. So you have a balayage. You move it.
A sweeping.
You have a sweeping. And this sweeping creates a sculpture, which is a mirror of ionized gaze. And this mirror is sustained by the sweeping. You cannot see it by your eyes. Mm-hmm. And this mirror can reflect the emission of a system like HARP and project it at 1,000 miles distance. Mm-hmm. So such system could act on wall countries, especially if people are equipped with this kind of RFID. You know, I could talk about this kind of things during hours. Better is to stop because you'll get depressed. You know? Exactly.
Well, we've talked about it on our website, and Laura's talked about the functioning of HARP in her work, especially in the secret history of the world, about HARP. You know, the cover story for HARP is that it has something to do with the weather. But, of course, this is just the cover story, and what it's really about is forms of mind control.
Yes, it can be used also for weather. And if you look at in my website again, you will find very strange image taken by infrared films relative to Katrina cyclone. And we got very puzzling images. You know that this cyclone had quick turns, just to avoid big storms. There were, and I won't say that we can create such cyclone, but we can ride it and make it turn. You know, and more recently we had images of systems able to create earthquake. And this may look fancy, but it's not. It brings me back to 1982 in Boston in a MHD meeting where I met a Russian. And this Russian showed me a picture that you discovered right now, more than 20 years after. This system were installed on big trucks, and they are like big cylinders, something like 4 meters diameter, and they are connected to a MHD generator. Was initial energy is produced by a rocket with solid propellant. This solid propellant is seeded by cesium in order to be very to have a high electrical conductivity. And it is designed to work during 5 to 10 seconds, and it produces 1,000 volts and 25 megawatts. And it is presented by the Russian and by everybody as a machine to measure the electrical conductivity of the ground. Can you imagine a system to measure a voltage with 400 amperes? You know, it's not a machine to measure. It's a machine to act on something. So, what can you do? And you can find this movie. It is on my website. You see the machine in operation. You see the derrick, which is coupled to the truck, and you see this rocket in function. And how does it work? Well, you go close to a, comment on a bit in fire,
a fault.
A fault.
A fault line in the earth, yeah.
Yes, you go close to a fault. You know that you have a strength, une contrainte tangentielle, strength. And this, you know that this fault is very close to move. You have to trigger it. And the way to trigger it, you install your truck on one side of the fault. You use the derrick to dig a pit, 7 centimeters diameter. You don't put in it a tube, but a solid metal needle. It's like a needle that goes 100, 200, 300 meters deep. And this needle reaches the water, so waterbed. And then you inject your 25,000 amperes. So you vaporize the water, and this lifts the ground, and then you trigger the earthquake. And this earthquake can act at 1,000 kilometer distance.
The problem with that, though, is, well, one possible problem I would have thought is that are they so smart as to be able to project what kind of effects that would have? You know, because I mean, you're dealing with fault lines. You're dealing with the earth and tectonic plates, etc. And it would seem to me to be quite a dangerous thing to do, because you might think that you're going to create an earthquake here in this fault line. And but can they limit the extent? Can they be sure that it won't destroy their own houses? Or
they don't care.
Well, yeah,
they don't care. You know, you can put this kind of system in a submarine, and you know that the tectonic effects are stronger under the sea. And you can trigger an earthquake in Indonesia. Even you plan for and some healthful population, but it's just you underestimate the effect.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that they don't care, but it just seems to me that this would be an example of that kind of arrogance that they think they can, you know, in a way control nature as well. And they end up destroying the world or something because of their arrogance. You know, because they think they can do such things. And
but there are mad people on this planet.
Mad.
You know,
yeah. They're completely crazy.
Yes.
Well, next we'd like to talk with Jean-Pierre about his experience with the Umites.
Who are the Umites?
Because they're not, it's not well known in the English-speaking world as it is in the Spanish-speaking world or the French-speaking world. So maybe you could fill in our listeners a little bit on that.
I could tell why it is not well known. Because, you know, in this affair, in this Umite case, people received letters with scientific information, and this scientific information at top level scientific information. Well, if it is top level information, perhaps people will not do anything with. But I was the exception. It started in 1975. Nobody had never done anything with. You certainly know a man known Jacques Vallée. He's a French.
Yeah.
He wrote a lot of books, and Vallée is no longer. He's not a physicist. He's a specialist in computer science. Vallée was read some letters, and he said it was absolutely not interesting because he could not understand what was in.
Mm-hmm.
And what was in were information about cosmology, about theoretical physics, about logic, about very sharp subjects. Well, I was in contact with these papers in 1975. A friend who was an astronomer had 20 pages, and he said, you know, these pages have been received by Spaniards. Would you like to have a look on it? Well, that was translated in French, and I read this paper, and I discovered a lot of things quite sophisticated. For an example, I remember in these first pages it said that when their vehicle experience acceleration, strong acceleration, you know, when you have to stand a certain amount of G, well, you are sat in a have a seat, but if you are in water, it's better, you know, because the pressure is everywhere, you know, and the best thing could be to be caught in stone. So just imagine a fluid that can be changed into a solid material with electric field or magnetic field. You will find it very easily on the web. It has been discovered recently, but it was described in 1967 in the Umite text.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you should tell our listeners a little bit about how the Umite experience began, because this may be the first time they've heard of it. You mentioned that you came in contact with the letters in 1975, but by then the contact had been established much earlier.
Yes. You know, of course, as a scientist, I read these papers, and I was puzzled by the fact that there were very sophisticated ideas about technology, intelligent material. Well, it would take minutes to explain that, but you can trust me, it was sharp. Mm-hmm. Well, so the question was, who received that? Let's go to Spain, let's meet these people. These people were not common people, but they were engineer, doctor, the owner of a factory, well, the middle-class people. And it started in 1965, I think. A man who was interested in the extraterrestrial problem was contacted by phone by a man who had a very strange accent. They were not speaking like... I could imitate them, you know, even Spanish.
Formulas, preguntas, cruces, hermanos,
Well, it's inspired by a tape we had when somebody recorded it. So you have the impression to talk to Donald Duck, you know. So this kind of like Donald Duck called this man whose name was Sesma. And they said, we come from another planet. And Sesma said, oh, nice. What planet do you come from? And I would like to meet you, to exchange with you. Oh, yes, so, when you like. You know, on Monday I have the Martian, Tuesday Venusian. What about Sunday next week? Well, something like that, you know. So they sent letters. And they asked Sesma to read the letters in this group. And, you know, I would like to start with something. The Ubermit affair, you know, it's a third Spielberg, a third Einstein, and a third Marx Brothers. And the Marx Brothers side cannot be evacuated. In the case. For example, the place in which Sesma held this meeting was a cave underground. And it was a club called La Balena Allegra. It means the happy whale. Mm-hmm. And he had a picture of this whale with a smile. You can find some image in my voice. That's crazy. You know? So during months, Sesma received the report, and he read this report in front of people who were very fond of esotericism and paranormal phenomena and so on. And Sesma received other letters because he had comments, personal comments. And letters, he said that they had the possibility to scan the brain of the people who are scanning the brain, but they can't do it at distance. So it's a very small system. And so the idea was, this is my, you read the letters and we scan the brains, but you don't add comments, please.
It's adding noise to our scans.
Exactly. And exactly. And you have a fantastic collection of letters where they say, you know, for the last time, please don't add your comments. Well, and then someday, after a few months, I think, they sent a letter as they said, well, we have shuttles that are coming to the Earth. Some will arrive in Bolivia, some will arrive in several countries, and one will arrive nearby Madrid. And the arrival time is scheduled from, and they gave a certain fork, you know, not exactly the precise hour, but between this time and this time. And they gave also a position with a certain uncertainty. And, well, there were 20 Spaniards, and they signed this document. I have seen the document they signed. They were three or 4 days later, the flying saucer would come. And so only four or five Spaniards went on the place because they didn't believe a word about it. And one was an engineer named Villagrasa. He had three camera around him. And then somebody said, sir, a flying saucer has landed in San José de Valderas, nearby there. So he went on the place. He found people completely scared, and there were imprints of the legs of the flying saucer. They have seen anything. And Villagrasa was there and said, I was aware about it, you know. And so a certain percentage of the member of the group escaped because they were scared, you know. You know, they want to dream, but if dream becomes reality, you know, it's too much to stand. Yeah. So better to go to fishing than participating to such things.
So the idea of the Umites is that there was, they say, a planet, their planet, and at one point they were just listening to what was coming in, and they picked up Morse code that they identified coming from the Earth.
Yes, you know, what we have to say is that we have papers, we mm-hmm. have letters. We can't just give comments about what these letters contain. Well, some of us have had a strange experience, like mm-hmm. me, for an example. But this is another story.
So we should be clear. This is what the Umites are saying about themselves, but there's no way at all to verify whether this is correct or not.
Yes. For example, personally, I have seen two kind of creature. One were similar to the description in the letter, but the other one looked like short gray, you know. Mm-hmm. So perhaps the short gray are following the movement, you know. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they are a club, you know, I don't know. But I would like to know the truth. What are you doing? What do you want? Well, let's be back to the story. If we return back to the letters, it must be in 1949, an operator received a message from the Earth. That was Morse, you know.
An UMO operator.
UMO operator with a big antenna, of course. And so they were surprised because it was coming from a star which was too hot, because their own star has a lower temperature. And they said it's very rare that life organize around stars like our sun. And we are looking at stars like our sun. And we don't realize it's an exception. We should look at the lower temperature star. Well, so they said, what that stuff? Do they want to say something? And one you meet suggested that we could try to transmit the theorem on the square. And so they decided to give a code name to the planet of the square. So a first expedition was arranged to visit this planet of the square that was 15 years far from UMO. And, well, this is a wide question. The travel are not possible all the time, you know. You have some condition in which space is plié, comment on dit?
Folded.
Dilated. Folded. You fold. And like a meteor cosmic condition, you know.
We can't go today because the weather's bad.
Yes, yeah.
And the universe isn't folded properly.
Yes, yes. You want our populations, the universe is folded conveniently to visit such planet or such planet, and if you want, you can take your place on a flying saucer visit. So the conditions were not so good, so they had a very short visit in the vicinity of the Earth, and we could talk about the way how they visit it. They use a twin universe, a sort of a high velocity subway, you know, because we have two universes, and on the second one, the velocity of the light is 50 times higher, so you can travel very, very fast, but depends on the meteor cosmic condition. And when they arrive, they missed the Earth, they arrive nearby Mars, and as we said before, we should go a little bit on the right. And then they arrive over the Earth. You know, I tell you, the aspect Mars Brothers is unavailable. And they recorded voices, and they recognized the signals, but they had enormous flux of information corresponding to all our foreign language, and in their planet they have only a single one, because their planet is flat. Why their planet is flat? Because they have no tectonic phenomena, and tectonic phenomena is a very peculiar to the Earth, you know. You have no tectonic phenomena on Mars, on Venus, and so on. It is the only planet that proves that. We can explain why it is like that. But, there are difficulties to recognize where who were the women and the female and the men, but you know, they had not so much time, though they decided to get back to their planet to organize a more sophisticated operation. So the second operation was operated 6 months later or so, a year later, and then they said they landed in France, in the south of France, nearby a town called Digne. And from their point of view, as their inhabitants live underground, for the very hard meteorological condition during the day, Well, they thought that Ding was a research center because it had buildings. And you know, this this emission is a vivid call to Spielberg. Please do a movie with that. Steven Spielberg called me. We are ready to give.
We have a great script.
We have a great, a fantastic script. You know, it's a, you would die laughing about that. You know, because they arrive in Digne and they dig a cave and they put six or eight persons, I don't remember, and then the flying saucer get away. And then they explore what's around, and they discover, the first thing they discover are flies, you know, flies flying over a piece of shit, you know. And a guy led that with a piece of a journal. And later, you know, after decoding what people said, they saw that it corresponded to a gesture, you know, the man who did that disagree with the content of the journal. You know, a nice Brzezinski story everywhere, you know. And well, after they got the piece of paper, it was a piece of a journal, there was a picture. And on this picture, you had human beings with their dress. So in order to explore outside, they decided to try to copy the dress. So they made a rough copy of the dress and went out. And when they met people of the Earth, they realized something was going wrong.
The people were looking at them a little strangely.
Yes, and then they went back to their shelter. And later they realized that it was a play of Molière corresponding to 17th century.
So the clothes they were in France in the 1950s, they were wandering around in clothes that would have been appropriate to the court of Louis XIV.
Let me see if I'm getting this straight. When they first came, they saw a copy of a Molière play.
They found a piece of newspaper.
A piece of newspaper.
That somebody had used, how do we say this politely, for hygienic purposes.
Okay. And they interpreted this that someone disagreed, the person who did this disagreed with what was in the what was in the newspaper.
It's a French expression. I can't tell it in French, but you know, when a Frenchman wants to disagree with something, uh-huh, well, there, I put it on my ass, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like in English, you know, I wouldn't wipe my ass with that document, you know. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So when they discovered that, they said, that's explanation, that's for where it was connected with.
This is how human beings disagree with something. Which is, you know, and it's figurative, but it's not generally, you know, a real life kind of phenomenon on Earth that you would always wipe your backside.
But for extraterrestrial people, you know, there is no connection, and they have absolutely no sense of humor, you know.
I'm now understanding the Marx Brothers kind of analogy. These Umites, you know.
So then they had to go back to their cave and redesign their clothes.
No, yes. You know, I could give a dozen of examples like that. But they used a very tiny object, MHD propelled, to explore the suburb and as a neighbor and to take pictures. And in this time, the man had pants, and you remember his pants had something like a leaf.
Very sharp creases in them.
Exactly. And so they just wonder why it was designed like that way. And the conclusion was to reduce the drag.
Uh-huh. Aerodynamic pants.
Exactly, aerodynamic pants. You know, you can't invent things like that, you know. It's full.
It almost provides some, you know, some verification that this is authentic, because you couldn't make it up, like you're saying. You know, if this was a government operation, then it can't be, because they wouldn't go to these ridiculous lengths. Yeah.
Yes. So then the Umites were in France, and then they moved to Spain, and they spent 15 years or so just observing before they made any contact.
Absolutely,
with anyone.
Yeah. And after they decided to send letters, and in their group some didn't agree. They said if we give information to people of the earth, it will modify the civilization and so on. So they try softly to give information, and they shaped the information in order that nobody could make any technological application from. Hmm? But I was the exception. Because, you know, probably on the planet they have an average human creature. But I'm not an average creature. So I was so curious about that. They said, for example, they are not a single universe, there is no single universe, but two. And in these two universes, the arrows of time are opposite. I read that they were enantiomorphic. I had to search in the dictionary. Enantiomorphic means that these two universes are in mirror. The electric charge are opposite. I just want to mention that the text was written in 1967. And just this is a... some researchers are thinking about that just right now. The only one who started to build a model with that is Andrei Sakharov, the Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew letters that he received letter too. It was not his ideas, you know. Because who would have the idea that there is another universe with the reversed role of time? That's crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
it's interesting because you mentioned in our last podcast that Sakharov was also involved in the magnetohydrodynamics. And so that's a certain parallel between your interests and the interests of Sakharov.
I have to confess, yes. I had a short trip in Russia, so it was difficult because I had no money to do that. And when I arrived to Russia, Sakharov was no longer kept in the town, you know. He could be free. What was the place where he was enclosed in a psychiatric hospital? I don't remember. But he went back there just for 8 days, and when people said, but you are going back there? Oh, yes, I know every people. But unfortunately, when I went to Moscow, he was gone away, so I could not meet him. First question I would ask to him, have you received a letter from Humid? Perhaps it would have been a chance to start an interesting cooperation, you know. Well, but I missed it. So in 1976, I tried to introduce this scientific data in a Newtonian model for cosmology, and you know it worked like a key for pour un coffre, une combinaison, tu vois.
For a safe, it was a key to get into the safe.
Yes. It worked, you know, and so I would. Convinced that this document contained top-level information in 1977. And this was published in the French Compte Rendu de l'Académie des Sciences and confirmed by the mathematician André Lichtenowitz. So we were very few, and we knew that there was something really interesting in it. And at its time, it was impossible for me to turn, to give up, you know, something like that. So I developed my research in relativistic point of view, and it took me very far. And perhaps it was not predicted by the Humids. They didn't think that foolish French would put the things together and succeed to build science with. And, after a while, Spanish said they want to meet you. So they invited me in Madrid, and I went with a friend. And we were ordered to go in a hotel. And I said, well, so you might want to come, so we come. I found out the Spaniard, and I said, well, we are waiting still 24 hours. What do we have to do? just, you wait. So we wait 2 days, and the second night, I woke in the middle of the night, I was paralyzed. And they went like in the Spielberg movie, you know, we were analyzed, like medical analysis, couldn't move. I will not give the detail because perhaps some lady could be shocked.
But this was a standard kind of medical examination by, okay.
Yeah.
By alien, as reported in alien abductions.
Exactly. Well, you know, we have a certain sense of humor, so it didn't change our behavior. In the morning, I said to my friend Jean-Jacques, well, we wanted adventure. We have it. So it was the beginning of some adventure. I have another adventure, completely crazy about it. So Spielberg has built the series Taken. Mm-hmm. That's very nice. So we have enough to make another series. Mm-hmm. But perhaps a little more funny, you know. And someday... I don't know if it is an abduction, but I had a scar on nearby my umbilic with an hematome. Comment tu appelles ça?
Un hématome.
Hématome and a scar. Well, after when I awoke, I went in my bathroom and I looked to my umbilic and I saw the scar and the hematome. So I went to see a friend who was a doctor, a surgeon. And the surgeon, he touched it, he said, they have entered your deeply, you know. You have a second scar inside. Mm-hmm. But what can I do else? I forgot that. And then my book were translated in Japanese. And I had a Japanese translator, whose name is Nakajima. He's a professor at the university. He's very serious. And he had a sabbatic year, and it was 10 years ago. Nakajima went in Aix-en-Provence, and I remember it was on Sunday morning at 9, the phone rings, I take the phone, hello,
Nakajima.
Ah, Nakajima, you have arrived in Aix-en-Provence.
Yes, yesterday.
Ah, the house is nice.
Yes, the house is nice.
Could you come, please?
Yes,
we are going to meet, to work together.
No, could you come at once?
At once? Is it so early? Could you tell me a little bit more by phone?
No, it's difficult to tell you by phone.
So I take my car, I go to meet Nakajima. Nakajima opens the door, he removes his shirt and he says,
Monsieur Petit, this car, I have the same.
Well, you know, Max Brothers. You know?
So, Jean-Pierre, after up until the time you went to Madrid, before this, were you skeptical about the UMO letters and everything you read? I know you said that you read the letters and there were things in the letters that seemed to be scientifically solid. They seemed to be real. But were you? What was your feeling at that point before going to Madrid?
You know, I will give you my feeling. I am involved in such stories in 30 years. The more time is passed, the less I understand. Mm-hmm. That's clear, you mm-hmm. know. Who is doing that? I don't know. The mm-hmm. only thing I know that I got a scar. Nakajima got a scar too. We had strange story. We made sense with strange letters. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And in these periods when you went and you met with the Umites and you were perhaps abducted, has this happened more than once? Has this happened more than once?
Oh, yes.
And do you have any conscious memories of what happens during these meetings with the Umites? Or is each of them, you're paralyzed and you're unable to act or react or...
There is something worse, you know. After many, many years, I just thought to my childhood, and then I was 10 years old, and at this time, it was in 1947, I lived in Paris, And we lived in a flat and at the first floor. And the door was open. It was during the summer of 1947. And during the summer, I had the visit of strange person, small size, with black eyes. And I thought they were dreams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that surprised me a lot was that after this night, I could act the piano at distance.
You could play the piano without actually touching it.
Absolutely.
Can you still do that?
No, no.
Can we have a demonstration?
No, but, you know, I had absolutely no knowledge about flying saucer on anything in 1947, you know.
Well, just it's a curious date, because the summer of 1947, of course, is the time when the Roswell incident occurred.
Exactly. But, you know, you have you are 10 years old, you dream about a little person with black eyes, and in the morning you act your piano at distance.
That's interesting in terms of the dates you're giving for the Umites, because that's 2 years before the Umites say they discovered the Morse code,
mm-hmm.
and 3 years before they first came to the Earth. So whatever that visit was, if it was a little gray back in 1947, according to the Umites' own story, that wouldn't have been the Umites, because they didn't know that we existed at that point.
We don't know if this Umite does exist. We don't know if this planet does exist.
Conversation with French astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit will continue in our next podcast.
And if you'd like to read more about the topics we've discussed today, you can visit our website at www.signs-of-the-times.org. And if you'd like to visit Jean-Pierre's site, the URL is www.jp-petit.com.